Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
This is how flying should be. That's what a Breeze guest recently said about Breeze Airways. Breeze flies nonstop to Sarasota, Bradenton, and more straight from Long Island MacArthur Airport. Breeze not only makes travel easy and affordable, but they offer flexible and friendly change policies, have high-speed Wi-Fi, and a premium first-class seat called Breeze Ascent. It's time you choose to fly Breeze. What are you waiting for? Book your flight today at flybreeze.com. Breeze Airways, seriously nice, in partnership with Visit Bradenton.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again, with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one, and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at BollAndBranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good afternoon, St. Louis. DJ S on KMOX. Happy Monday. Happy MLK Day. Happy Inauguration Day. It's happy day.
Happy cold day.
Happy America's Back Day.
Yeah.
Football. College football.
National Championship Day. Yeah.
And the day after the Lions went down.
Well,
my condolences.
But yeah.
Oof.
It's a sad day.
I was pulling for you.
The saddest of days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was not.
They crapped
the bed. I was rooting so hard against the Lions.
Yeah, you should. You're a Bears fan.
Yeah, because now the Bears can go hire your coach.
I enjoy
that's
all of
I
the
want.
Bears' failures, so yeah, that's fine.
Oh, well,
that's what rivals do.
Yeah. But now we can have your coach.
Yeah. Mm. We'll keep the main guy.
I do like Dan Campbell a lot. He's awesome.
Does Wheeler know about all the people who are just tweeting their declining the Bears head coaching position?
Oh, yeah, we had Dennis Dodd from CBS on about it. Like, was it the Lawrence Police Department?
The chief of police is like, I will not want a head coach.
That's pretty funny.
That's really funny.
I don't want to get in the weeds on this, but it's just because it came up. Like, what is with the teams interviewing like 17, 18 guys? Like, they're not actually considering 17 or 18 guys. What are they doing?
Maybe everyone's saying no.
I think just the Bears. No, because some of them are getting like two interviews. And I know a lot of them are virtual interviews. So maybe that's why, because people are doing that more. And it's just, you can do more of them that way. But it just seems weird that it's not just, and it isn't just the Bears. The Jets are doing it.
Teams.
Like a bunch of these
teams
are doing
that. I think it's they want you to think they're doing their due diligence.
Right. They really have like two people. You know, the Bears will just hire whoever's represented by Trace Armstrong. That's what they always do.
It reminds me sort of radio. When someone in radio gets fired for having low ratings and revenue, and someone's like, we got to get them. And the same thing with coaching. Like, it's like someone's treasure, someone else's garbage.
You would be amazed at how much of it is just familiarity, where guys, people who make decisions in front offices just know somebody. Or it's done as a favor to an agent.
Well, see, that's the big story here lately. There are agents that try to sell their clients in package deals.
What?
Yeah.
So they will represent both a general manager candidate and a coach, and they say, well, you know, if you take my GM guy, you can hire my coach guy.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. It's actually being investigated by the
NFL. Is it
legal? It's shaky. Let's put it that way. There are people that are wondering whether or not there should be a crackdown. And by people, I mean like people in the sport, not media people, not fans, but like teams, league officials going, this is weird. There's the power structure's wrong here. We're giving the power to the agents.
But that's a bad deal. But what happens? I worked in a sports agency for a minute. I was interning there, and just listening to some of the phone calls, it was like they would, to put a player on a roster, they'd be like, hey, well, you know, why don't you, the agent would say this to the team, like, this guy needs a job. Why don't you just give him a job? And how often the teams go, okay, whatever. It's, you think that all these teams are like scouring analyzing all these players, but there are at least a handful of players on every team that's just a favor to somebody. That they're on the roster.
Right.
You'd
and
be stunned.
And it's, you know, especially when it's the agents, it's like just building up goodwill.
Yep.
Because at some point you're probably going to need to do a bigger deal and you want them to like you and you want to like them. And the agents do the same thing, by the way. They'll do favors for, you know, shot callers so that they can have that relationship for bigger deals later on down the road, too.
Yeah. Okay, so we're probably not coming back to this much. What do we need to talk about the inauguration? How much have you guys talked about it? Any major? I mean, to me, I thought it was sort of like the Diet Coke of last time. You know, last time was American Carnage, and this time was sort of flirting with American Carnage, but didn't really come out and say it. I think this is kind of an interesting question. We only perceive the world and politics and religion and everything through our own, you know, brain and nervous system. And I'm wondering whether Donald Trump, now President Donald Trump, is in the wrong for saying these bad things about his predecessors as they sit 8 feet behind him? Or do I just perceive it that way because it makes me so personally uncomfortable? Mm. Right? Just because I'm uncomfortable doesn't mean that it's wrong. At least I can admit that.
Yeah, I'm less worried about those things because these are all big boys, and if you can't handle it, and I shouldn't say big boys because that makes it sound like it's all dudes, but it's been mostly dudes at president. But, you know, just if you're playing at that level, you can take it, right? I mean, you're playing in the major leagues. You should be able to accept that sometimes you're just going to lose and you're going to end up eating it. I have a hard time with everyone who does this swinging back and forth every time it's a new party in. Always acting like the previous group was ruining the country and it's going to hell and this is going to be the end of democracy or the apocalyptic talk, like I'm going to save everything. Because it's not just this particular guy that does it. He did it today, Trump did, and he did it the last time he was sworn in. But Biden did the same kind of thing, maybe a little less inflammatory language, but the same idea. And every 4 years or every time we switch, one group of people is like, well, we're doomed. 4 years of misery. The country's dead. And I'm like, why are we such drama queens? I know you're going to not like some things. And there are going to be some things that are bad for groups of people. And just like other groups of people thought there would be bad things or think there were bad things the last 4 years. We just can't be grown-ups. We can talk about real problems and real flaws in policy and people that are going to be harmed by specific things, regardless of who a candidate is or what their administration is. But we don't have to take it to that level where our country's dead and somebody's got to save it.
The reason it happens is because that language works.
Yeah, I know.
It works politically. It gets people fired up and it gets them to vote.
And I'm blaming people for falling for it.
Can I tell you, I've pared it down as much as I can. I have two reasons why Donald Trump won. And I know I'm correct. There may be many more reasons, but to me, in general, it's for two reasons. One, he is the entertaining option, and we live in a time of entertainment. We no longer live in a time of statesmen. We no longer live in a time of, you know, historical precedent. We live in a time of entertainment. We live in a time when we can't take a 2-hour TikTok ban because we lose our damn minds. So I think that the first reason is he's the more entertaining option. And because wokeness, however you decide to define that yourself, has become the worst thing in America. So for the people, and I don't like wokeness either. I'm sort of a Bill Maher on this. So for the people who hate wokeness and like entertainment, there you go. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, it was like a week ago, we kind of got into that where you can be on the side of trying to help people but go too far in demonizing people that are too slow to come around or, you know, like, I'm not even talking Me Too, because if you did all the stuff that people were accused of Me Too, you deserve to be dragged. But in other things, sometimes it takes time and you get into the, you know, the name calling and, you know, all of that stuff. And the extreme, not the extreme view, but the extreme criticism of people that have not come that far yet. You know, your term was always give people some grace. Don't jump down their throats because they do something that they didn't mean to do versus people that are trying to intentionally be mean. It whether you agree or not, it clearly turned people off. It clearly did. Like that, it may not have been the intent, and it may not even mean that people that are completely turned off by some of those ideas are right, but it clearly had that effect.
And like me, you can be attracted to some of the ideas, but really put off by the delivery.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's where what Kevin's talking about is where most people live, even people who do have more progressive thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they are. They're not going to demonize you for using the wrong word.
Right.
Like, but a very small, just like anything else, a very small group of people become loud enough, and then the perception is, well, they're all like that.
Yep.
But they're not.
So we have a pretty good mix of political leanings here in this room. If you were, if you had the ear of the Democrat Party, what are you telling them? Got 4 years to prepare. What do you got? What do they need to do?
I mean,
or stop doing.
Well, I think it's the same for both parties that I would like. I don't think it's different for the Democrats and the Republicans in terms of what I would advise, and that would be stop playing to your fringes. And all of, for both of them, stop playing to your fringes because it's not good for the rest of us. You know, those of us that don't want to be on the extreme end of the political philosophical spectrum don't want to be ruled by those that are there because, as you point out, it's the small percentages. The vast majority of people in the country do not fit into the category of extreme views. They just don't. If we did, we'd be constantly fighting each other in the streets. We get along. We're all fine. We go to work together. We shop together. We live next door to each other. Most people are just normal. And I would love, my advice would be to play to that. And I would, my advice would be that to both parties, though. It wouldn't just be to the Democrats.
Amy?
You disagree?
I mean, you know that I think that they should play probably more to the fringes. I think the fringes are widening, right? I think the fringes are, before you know it, the fringes are going to be bigger than ever. You know what I mean? I think that's an underserved voting base, not an underserved voting base on the right, but a severely underserved voting base on the left. And I think that obviously what they've been doing, and by they I mean Democrats, obviously what they've been doing has not worked and not been successful by any stretch. And you're giving Trump many, many easy, easy dunks with the hostages releasing and TikTok, you know, going down and then coming back by going, oh, President Trump saved it. How about that? He's your hero if you love TikTok. You're giving him so many easy dunks, so many easy layups. When you ask me what I think they need to change going into the next election cycle, I think the answer is everything.
How do they do that, though? Not to.
Well, keep in mind, Trump's not going to be a factor next time.
I'm not ready.
I mean, well, put it this way. If that changes, then the message has to change dramatically because that's a big problem. We should be sticking to the two terms.
Well, I don't know that they have somebody who can replace him. They don't have anybody with the charisma.
This is my point, right? Like you're not running against him specifically in 4 years.
Right. Which does make a big difference.
Maybe some ideologies, but you say it all the time, Dave, and I think you're right. He's the difference. It's not the policies and the ideas that are the difference. He's the difference.
I will give him this on his day. However he did it, he won twice. However he did it, he put a bunch of people in a room, supporters, enemies, the richest people in the world, tech oligarchs. He put them all in a room supporting him. I'll give him that. And then secondly, someone said something this morning. There was like a Jake Tapper throwaway where he just said like, well, he certainly has faith in himself. That's an understatement.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He certainly does.
Yes, he does.
You know?
And it's part of why it works. If you don't believe in yourself, well, who is going to believe in you?
Yeah. Andrew says that all the time.
Yep, that's my motto.
Yeah.
It's kind of my motto.
He writes it on a piece of paper and slides it to me.
Yeah.
Halfway during the show.
Can I say something about Melania's hat?
If you must.
That thing is bananas.
It's kind of Zorro.
I kind of like
that
it.
That thing is crazy.
I think she looks beautiful.
I think it was Pajeski said it looks like Spy versus Spy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool hat.
I actually like the hat.
Can't see the eyes because there could be some shady. You could be like eyeballing people and nobody would know.
He's doing a signing ceremony at the U.S. Capitol. When we find out what he's signing, we'll let you know. Quick break, right back. DGS on KMOX. Welcome back, guys. DGS 123. So for all of you out there who are have to work today like we do or just chilling on this national holiday, Let me give you a solid lateral. No matter what has happened already today, no matter what else happens today, even if he signs an executive order that outlaws KMOX, it'll be worth it for one image that will live forever. And this is basically Sophia Loren looking at Jane Mansfield's cleavage, except that it is Bezos's girlfriend and Mark Zuckerberg and an amazing human being behind Mark Zuckerberg. Who is leaning up to look straight down at her chest.
And he's like, ooh.
Did you know, ooh.
Well, because it's important to note that Jeff Bezos' fiance thought it prudent to forego a shirt to the presidential inauguration and is wearing a white lace bra with a blazer.
I think she looks nice.
Ron, would that have been
very nice?
Is the guy
very
in the second,
nice and classy.
Is the guy in the second row? Is that you?
Chris made the same face as the guy.
He's like, but, ooh,
but isn't it, but honestly, isn't it amazing that we revere these people and we talk about them on a daily basis and we try to imagine what it would be like to have that kind of money and power? And we get right down to it; it's just dudes looking at boobs.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
They're like everyone else, maybe worse.
Yep.
I think that if I knew I were on international television, I could probably sneak a peek. Old Zuck, he's not used to it, is he?
They're not being subtle, are they?
No.
They're just like...
Well, she wasn't subtle either. She's not wearing a shirt.
That's a good point.
You saying she's asking for it?
No, I would be looking. I would be looking. If you're wearing just
Do you know what it does? It looks like the Seinfeld episode with the lady wearing the bra.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
She's like, you know, that's not a top.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I'm aware.
Here's the thing.
Now, keep in mind, like, if a guy was there with a jacket and no
shirt,
that would be
also drawing
stares.
That's my point. Whenever you don't wear a shirt, you're looking at that. Yeah.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
If you're ripped, though.
Yeah. If she had small boobies, big boobies, or if it was a guy, people would notice the person without a shirt on. You just do.
There's a haboob warning in D.C.
Two haboobs. Oh.
Can't drive like that.
I know what a haboob is, but I feel like a haboob describes Jeff Bezos' head.
Yeah.
I don't know if like that
is
a haboob.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I don't know why. Just it one. Looks like a haboob.
Yeah, it
a
does.
Single haboob.
Yeah, it does.
Does that mean? I don't know, but just wear a shirt at the inauguration.
Well,
I just
clearly
feel like
it's
that's
a
not
shirt.
Asking
I don't think
too
it's,
much.
I don't think it's actually a bra.
It's a lace corset type, so maybe it goes down to her belly button, but it is very lingerie-esque.
I do think we should keep speculating on it, though.
Yeah. Andrew,
what else do you think it might
Andrew has now struck the pose of the man in the second row.
We're just going to go around the horn here.
I've seen that top at Free People. Free People has it in pink and black and white and green. You can get them. They have a lot of lacy brassiere tops.
What are you looking at that stuff for?
Fantastic.
Well, just in case, you know, I decide to be wild
attend the
crazy.
Inauguration
yeah,
next time.
Yeah, that's my inauguration top.
In case she gets invited to be the president's guest of
honor. I have a red one and a blue one, depending on who wins.
Sure.
I will look appropriate no matter what.
There are so many tech bro jokes in that, too. Just like, never seen a lady before. Zuckerberg.
Oh,
like,
it's a lady.
Is that what a lady looks like?
Oh, there's boobies.
Mr. Zuckerberg. I mean Zuckerberg.
They're right there.
Like, don't play that much into the stereotype of, like, the nerds taking over.
I don't know. They're distracting.
It's the whole reason he made Facebook, so he could look at boobs.
By the way...
Because he couldn't do it in real life, so he had to make this app.
Those are the people that people should be worried about, not candidates of either party. They should be worried about these people. The Zuckerbergs, the Bezoses,
with
the
influence.
Musks.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting elected anything. They're just buying influence. They're just and that it's not one party they buy it with because they donate
and it's
to
working.
Democrats. Yes, it does.
It is working.
Yes, it does. That would be the only thing that people should be worried about to me is... People like that just buying influence rather than having to run for office and be elected to choose to do things.
Rich boob lookers.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem.
There are all these, you know, everyone from Clarence Thomas, Pete Hegseth, they're all at the inaugural luncheon. When was the last time you guys went to a luncheon? I feel like it's been a while.
I avoid them.
Luncheon's lunch. Always...
Cardinals media luncheon probably
that one
a few years ago.
Yeah.
Once you put on the back of lunch, it's boring.
It is, right?
Mm-hmm. It means people are going to talk.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 133. KMOX, happy Monday to you. Big day, MLK. Most people are off. Inauguration, the president and the first lady have just arrived at the luncheon. You know, the whole strange bedfellows thing. Trump sitting next to Klobuchar and just she's having the time of her life and... Okay, I'm going to ask a question. It's a lot like the question I asked a half an hour ago, but I couldn't do this. I couldn't dog cuss you behind your back and then see you and act normal. You know what I mean? Like, I just... But the fact that I couldn't doesn't mean that it's not okay to do that for our leaders, I guess. Do you get what I'm getting at? Like, it's just so foreign to me to see them just absolutely eviscerate one another and then not only be able to shake hands, I appreciate that, but then just to glad hand and let's have lunch and, you know, laugh over the French dressing. Like, it doesn't compute to me. Is it because I'm a normie?
They even, in the Democratic primary, Kamala Harris did that to Joe Biden, right? They're on stage and she's saying he's, you know, a racist and talks about busing and segregation and how he was backwards and then becomes his vice president and everybody's cool. It's a very weird world.
Except for Jill. Jill wasn't cool.
No. So there's two parts to it to me anyway. One is I think it just shows you how much they, it's one of two things. Either they're just that cold and they don't care about anything as long as they're getting their access to power and they'll just whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. Or it's all BS and they all
probably
know
both.
It. And they all know it and behind closed doors, which is what we've seen, right? We saw that with W and Obama. They're like boys. And even at the Jimmy Carter Memorial, we were talking about how it was Trump and Obama sitting there giggling and laughing as they were waiting to come in. And
to what extent then do you think it's sort of WWE? To what extent do you think that as they're doing it, they know what they're doing?
Sure looks like it sometimes.
I don't buy that it's a show as much anymore. I think there probably used to be that, but I would guarantee that most of these people like Obama, Trump sitting next to each other, I bet they genuinely do not like one another. I bet that a lot of what you see, the rhetoric that's said about the opponent, I think a lot of these politicians actually do feel that way, but they're just being cordial at a funeral. They're being cordial at an official gathering like these. Like,
dude,
these,
if somebody
these
said
luncheons.
To me some of the things that those people say about each other, you better not sit me next to them.
And I think there's different combinations because we know historically in the past, Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell were good friends. We know this. This is true. Then you have the rhetoric that Mitch McConnell has. You have Biden, you know, when he had his voting rights amendment saying everybody who didn't agree with this was part of, you know, Jim Crow. That's a pretty harsh allegation to throw Mitch McConnell under, but they were friends. So I think there are times when they use strong rhetoric, even though they get along and they disagree with each other. Then I think there are times when they use strong rhetoric and they really do hate each other. It's probably different each relationship to each relationship.
Yeah, and I don't think it's... I think a lot of people believe that they put on this show on TV for all of us to see, and then they go behind closed doors like, hey, we fooled them. We fooled them, didn't we? I don't think they're doing that. I think that now, especially now, there's a lot of legitimate dislike between the parties.
Well, like, didn't we say, like, if you met, you know, you've been forthcoming, right? Honest about your opinion about Donald Trump. But if he walked into the station,
you would shake his hand
yeah. out of respect for the
office.
The office.
Yeah.
And to, like you said, that's not hypocritical. That's respecting the office. And I'm sure that that happens a lot, too, mm-hmm. in D.C. You're respecting the office.
Yeah, but he never called Ranji every name in the book.
But he
and
would.
And he never never made up things about, you know, again, not just him.
I get it.
It's the whole back and forth. Think of the things that people said about him, and he's going to just sit there and be nice to him. I mean, I don't understand why we stand on ceremony. That's not, obviously it's not me, so maybe I'm just the weirdo. This is just Wheeler being Wheeler. But, like, if you don't like somebody, it's okay to say you don't like them and just not like them and not pretend that you do because cameras are on.
But you can not like someone and shake their hands. I do think within leadership position, I think ceremony, decorum, or as you call it, official etiquette matters. We've seen where someone like Mike Pence's wife, Mrs. Pence, she did
mother,
not.
Mommy. Mother.
Mother.
Mother Pence. She did not shake Trump's hand. And okay, that's fine because it at Jimmy Carter's funeral, because it's the funeral. Her husband shook his hand right after the whole hang Mike Pence thing. I didn't have a problem with that. Maybe we would all handle that situation the same way or differently. Like I said, I probably within context of both the situation and your current position, in the government and their position in the government, that probably helps dictate what you do.
I mean, if any of us in this room were Mike Pence and you got thrown under the bus like that, would you shake Donald Trump's hand?
And I feel like that is such an extreme situation.
If you were Donald Trump and you've heard the things that Joe Biden said about you, you're the end of democracy, all this stuff, would you shake that man's hand?
As much as it makes me uncomfortable when Donald Trump or any other politician says really to me over the edge things, it does make me happy and proud when the Mike Pences of the world and the Joe Bidens of the world do shake their hand and do make it okay for me as institutionalists. So, yeah, I probably would, but for that reason. Because I think Mike Pence and Joe Biden are doing it for much, much more than just Donald Trump's comfort.
This is probably just why I'm not suited for that game. Because that's just wrong. I mean, and if I did shake the man's hand, it would be to pull him in close to say something really mean to him.
But it shows, I mean, it does show character on Mike Pence's part, because on January 6th, Mike Pence stood in the gap. He didn't, you know, he certified the election. He didn't listen to Trump and just say, okay, I'm going to say that it was rigged. He stood in the gap on that day. And Mike Pence, whether you love him or hate him, is a great American because of that moment. Believes in the constitutional powers, which is the most basic thing we ask of you.
You think he'll be storied 100 years from now the way some of our founding fathers are?
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just being short-sighted because we have such a disposable, short memory society.
Yeah, because I wonder I've not read about everybody in history that was important, but a lot of them were much more important after the fact than they were in the moment. It just in the way they were perceived.
Yeah, not founding father level. I think his act will be remembered.
Right.
Founding father is always going to be different. Yeah. When you recount the election of 2020 and January 6, 2021, I think that will be remembered. I just don't think it'll be like, oh, there he is on Mount Rushmore.
Wheels, you were saying if you were Biden, you'd be like, kiss my ass.
Yeah, take me to the Bahamas,
see
baby.
You guys
Let's
in
go.
A couple
I'm
years.
Done. I'm done. No, you'd never see me again. I've done 50 years of this, and if I'm in his shoes, I'm just, what part of the world do I want to go live in? I'm gone. See ya. Bye. Maybe I'll come back for the next inauguration, you know, or the next time somebody.
The old tan.
Next time there's a state funeral. Yes, I'd be out.
The next
just
state
like,
funeral
see
might
ya.
Be his.
Well, sure. Then you come back.
I'm just saying, wherever he goes.
He'll be there for that one.
Yeah, see, he'll be there for that one, too.
Come on,
I'd be,
the guy
I'd be
is
so
struggling.
Out. Like, you'd never just gone. Done. I did my time. I'm out.
But these people are wired differently, though.
I know.
To want to do the job in the first place.
Yeah.
That's why I said
there's a madness in wanting to do this job.
Well, even like Nancy
Which
Pelosi.
Maybe explains all that stuff we're talking about. Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi is worth $500 million. Go home.
Yeah.
Go have
go
fun
spend some
with
time
your
with your family.
Kids. Yeah. Go to the beach.
Well, I think there's
We
one...
say that about Elon all the time. Like, dude, just relax. Go to the beach. You got everything.
You could watch my life and be confused about how important money is to me or what is important to me. But when you watch someone with $500 million, whatever they're doing is what's important to them because they can do anything they want
right.
to do.
Yeah.
So when Nancy Pelosi is still playing the political game, it's because that's exactly precisely what she wants to be doing because she doesn't have to do anything.
And it is, I've heard from, you know, inside the Beltway experts, but just like it is a power trip to have a motorcade and to have people wanting to interview you and take pictures of you and bending over backwards to your every beck and call. And that's something that when you are a senator or the Speaker of the House, it's hard to give up. It's just kind of a power
trip. That's why we need to put in some rules that make them give it up at some point. We can debate how long, but you know, if you're addicted to that, maybe we should have an intervention and put people in there that are not as addicted to it as you are in that moment.
This is a weird analogy, and I'm not equating them. I'm just saying if getting older and your performance getting worse didn't matter for your ability to retain the job, how many athletes would just stay on their
All
teams forever?
If you could just keep making $30 million a year,
terrible.
Michael Jordan would still be playing.
Yeah. And
he'd
like,
be
man.
65 years old playing in the NBA if it didn't matter how good you were. If you
good
could just,
point.
Yeah. I mean, like, of course you're going to do that, which is why in sports, it's why, I mean, I think a lot of my views are just because I'm such an idiot and I've just lived too much in the sports world. Because at some point, people just tell you're done. You're done. You're over.
I'll
Maybe we owe you some money, but you're done.
I'll tell you this right now for free. I'm going until it gets Joe Biden awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're like, where is Jill? Where?
Yeah, but
Phoebe,
see, in our,
like, Phoebe,
in our business.
Grab your dad and get him out of here.
People are like, I blame Nick.
Yeah.
He should have stepped in years ago.
Yeah. Except in our business, there are people that do that stepping in.
Oh, hoity toity toity too.
And I'm like, Glover's always been prone to gaffes and Irish impressions. It's just Glover being Glover.
Something's wrong with Dave.
And I'll literally be the old man just yelling at clouds.
Oh, you will.
The old man hoity toity.
I'm so angry.
Clouds and bus drivers just out there yelling at people.
Let me give you guys a solid recommendation, and that is for the Retirement Planning 101 seminar put on by financial and tax architects. Sometimes when I do these, I like to take a different approach, which is, why would you object? Why would I object? So if someone who I trusted, hopefully have a little bit of trust in me, says, hey, look, if you're interested in finances, they have this thing going on. I'm going to go to this. You want to go with me? My objection would be, are you taking me into some sort of trap? Are you luring me into what sounds like an easy, laid-back evening, and then someone's going to put a hard sell on me? Well, again, if you trust me at all, know that that's not going to happen. A fiduciary advisor from financial and tax architects with decades of financial planning experience is going to put these on at colleges and libraries throughout St. Louis. They will talk about tax-saving strategies. One of the big things they'll talk about is, now that you have put X hundreds of thousands of dollars into your IRA or your 401k, when it's time to take it out, which I don't even think about that. I just like try to put as much in as I can and hope that the you know, the keeps going up. But how do you get it back out? Social Security. I'm 60. Do I take it at 62? I plan on working until I'm 70 or more. So do I wait until I'm 66 and a half or 70 when it comes to fruition? All these things and more. Even if you're pretty financially savvy, you're going to learn something. No obligation, no hard sell whatsoever. All you have to do is call and reserve a spot for you or you and your spouse or another couple. 314-350-8110 for financial and tax architects. 314-350-8110. 49 DGS and KMOX, happy Monday to you. Hopefully you're enjoying your day off. Kind of tough to do outside. Pretty damn cold out there today. So we're watching all of this on television, and Donald Trump is at this luncheon, and he was at the inauguration, obviously. Then he went to the Capitol building, and then he has the three different balls to attend and all these other things that he has to do. Get it? Not criticizing whatsoever. But they're also showing Trump supporters in various bars, sort of like going to a Packers bar or a Mizzou bar and watching the festivities, which leads to an interesting question that someone had on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't even know who this person is, but it was an interesting tweet, and I think it speaks to the state of politics as a whole, with how regular Americans are just used as props, right? So this guy said, Trump surrounded himself at rallies with everyday Americans, coal miners, police officers, teachers, factory workers, so why only politicians and billionaires for the inauguration? And you can, this is about Trump now, but is it any different? Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to these campaign stops, it's always going to be about Joe the plumber and, you know, Lindsay the teacher. And then when it's time to do things, you're only surrounded by people that provide your power.
And when you do the State of the Union, you're going to bring in a few normies.
Yeah.
Oh, here's Gladys. She's worked as a custodian for 60 years. But you're right. And I think the answer is because they don't know any.
One night, one goal, stop suicide. On June 21st, New York City will host the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's milestone 30th Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk. Join thousands as we journey over 16 miles from dusk till dawn for a night of healing and hope while raising much-needed funds and awareness for this important cause. Register today at theovernight.org or call 888-THE-OVERNIGHT, 888-843-6837.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And this is the thing that this is why we should be all more unified in our irritation with the system, is we're basically props in a political game. All of us. I don't care if you lean right or you lean left. You're a prop. Because when it comes down time to do things, the people that are the most important will only consider the other people that they think are the most important. That's it.
Yeah,
the
but
biggest,
I mean,
the
I
biggest
think a prop-
donors, the biggest fundraisers, the people that went out and campaigned for them, that it's going to be that. It's not going to be you. We're not. It's the Carlin thing. It's a big club and you're not in it.
Yeah. But the inauguration, yeah, those are donors. They're donors and political people because, you know, they're a sway. And maybe you could say some of the donors are there because they've got to show fealty to whoever's president, because then they have to lobby, or their lobbyists have to lobby for their companies where, you know, we work. Yeah. That's just the way it works with money and donors. They're going to be at these events. I don't like the word like that we're all just props, in the sense that it seems to imply that we don't have agency, but we do have a democracy and our voices do matter. And we did not only vote for the president, but we voted for our senators mm-hmm. and our representatives, and we vote for our local governments. We, you know, to say if we are props, then any other populace of any other country, they're just non-existent. I mean, we have more voice than most people, so we're not props.
I said it poorly. We are props to them. That's how they treat us. That's how they use us. That's how they look at us. That's not how it is. I think you're right, Amy. We do have a voice. We do have a vote. We can move every one of these people out if we chose to, as if you can get people to build a consensus. So I think that's a really good point. We are not props, but that's how we're treated. That's how they view us. And by they, I just mean the people in power. I don't mean any, like, behind the scenes, capital T, they. I just mean the people that are trafficking in power.
I mean, yes, I get it. Like, I agree that money does show, does have crazy sway, which is why the pharmaceutical companies give millions of dollars to Democrats and millions of dollars to Republicans, because the pharmaceutical company is what's good for big pharma. But I also wouldn't necessarily look at the inauguration ball and say, why aren't there regular Joes there? Well, regular Joes are at other things like rallies, and you could say that Trump and Biden passed promoted or signed legislation that was created for regular Joes, whoever, you know, was involved in that legislation. But the inaugural event, it's a party. It's a party for wealthy people, wealthy
donors.
Yeah, it's
only for the people in the club,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and connected people. But you could say the same thing on a much smaller scale to the governor's ball. You know, it's just political people and people who donated.
Yes.
And it gets smaller and smaller to Sam Page's little dinner, whatever he has. So, yes, but it doesn't outrage me, because that's just kind of how it works with inauguration balls. And then it's like, what are you going to do now moving forward? That's what matters.
I don't think it's outrageous. What it is just an illustration of what Kevin is talking about.
Yeah.
That these people have outsized influence.
You're not in the club,
you're
is
not,
all it is.
We don't have the influence they do.
I'm not in the club.
They have it a thousandfold over what we have.
Yeah. And they have the power to push things to the Supreme Court. And they, again, just people with money, not any particular they.
You take your favorite justice on a trip.
So you can get things like Citizens United, where wealthy people don't have what you and I have, which is our voice and our vote. They have their voice, their vote, and their millions of dollars to throw at people to buy influence. And we're all okay with it because we let it happen. And Amy, you're right. We could change all of it. We just don't have the focus or the desire, and we're too busy yelling at each other.
Yeah, and I would hope that, too, diversity within Congress, diversity within the Supreme Court means that not a single person can influence everyone. You may have someone throwing money behind a certain idea in Congress, but there are going to be other Congress members who are being pushed in a different direction. And I get it. I mean, money is power. It always has been. But, yeah, I think it is.
I mean, Elon's literally going to be in charge of what things go in the budget and don't, and he's never been elected anything.
Is it even realistically possible anything else?
No, in fact, I think we could always argue that this is, Amy, I think you hit it, Amy, that this has been the way it's been forever, to going back before the United States was a country. Right? Money has always run things.
I'm fascinated to know, if you could go back and talk to the founding fathers, how Pollyannish they were. If you could show them 2025 without showing them things that freaked them out, if they would just go,
yeah, you don't think so?
I think they were super cynical. I think they'd be shocked it lasted this long. All of the letters, if you read letters from John Adams and Thomas Jefferson in the early 19th century,
so
the 1800s, yeah, I mean, basically they're all like, we'll see. Like, no democracy, as John Adams said, no, there has not yet been a democracy that didn't commit suicide. Like, democracies don't last. So I think they were all incredibly hopeful but cynical because I think they understood human nature a lot better than we do, and I think they would be surprised it still exists, to be honest.
I don't know that I fully agree with it, but there are people that will argue that a lot of what they set up was for people with money and land to continue to make the rules.
Well, certainly. I mean,
right?
Yeah, to the point that some people didn't even have a vote.
That's right.
Yeah.
And not some people, probably a majority of the people.
But that's
why women make up half the population, just roughly speaking, in any given pint. And then you take out anybody of any color, and it was guaranteed less than half the people actually had a say in anything.